The DigitalLifeStrangle.com presents The Media Centre Show, show 171, Thursday, 4th of from Embedded Automation. I'm Ian Dixon. Welcome back after a week off. And this week I'm going to be talking to blogger Kevin Toefel about cloud computing. As we move into cloud applications from Microsoft, Google and others, what does cloud computing mean and what does it mean for the digital lifestyle and media center users? And do we need to worry about security, availability and those kind of things? So we'll be talking to Kevin about that. I also have a roundup of the last week or so's news and your email. So let's dive straight into the email, and this is from Gordon. Hi, I'm disappointed you do not have more coverage of Vista TV Pack. I have 4 TV streams, 2 DVB-S and 2 DVB-T via Black Gold Card. It's fantastic. I can now record 4 channels at once and also watch BBC HD free. Pity about the limited support for BBC HD via the Linksys extenders. I can stream full MPEG 4 H.264 from my new Toshiba Gigashot A100F HD camcorder. Absolutely fantastic setup. So why can I not stream BBC HD to the extender? Gordon. Thanks for your email, Gordon. I'm not sure what more I can say about the TV pack at the moment. I've used it with DVB-T and not used it with a satellite, and so I've not tried it with the BBC HD. Although I did talk to someone so they couldn't get that working, so it's interesting that you've got the BBC HD working, and it is a shame it won't stream. It's got to be sort of codec support and something to do with that. And I know you say you can get the Toshiba Gigashot HD camcorder stream across, but I'm sure it's something to do with the H.264 encoding. So I'll try and find out more information on that for you. But it is a shame that codec support is not built in, and I'm sure it's to do with the fact that Media Center won't natively support the 264, and that's the problem with the streaming. Thanks for the email, and we'll bring you more coverage of TV Pack as there really is more to talk about. So with it being OEM only, it's limited the availability for regular Media Center users. Well, as soon as we get stuff, I'll bring that to you. Now an email from James. Hi, Ian. I'm a regular reader of the blog and wondered if you come across a decent interface allowing fast, easy selection of music in Media Center for XP. I'm fed up with having to switch from the remote to the keyboard to fire up Media Player to quickly choose albums or single songs because the interface of my music is clunky and slow. Worst case would be to buy an iPod pure as a music storage selection device and leave it plugged in, but I try and avoid doing that. My wife hates the interface so much she uses CDs in the living room, PC drive, even though they're ripped to the hard drive. Any ideas will be gratefully received. James. Thanks for the email, James. It's been a while since I've used the XP version of Media Center. The Vista interface is great, and everybody in the family seems to be happy using that one, so I think the wife acceptance factor on that is pretty good. As for recommendations for XP, I can't think of an alternative music UI for XP. The problem with third-party applications for XP is that they're all HTML-based applications, so very basic, and you're not going to get the full functionality that you can with a Vista Media Center application, where the developer can really go to town and create some interesting applications. So I'll open it up to listeners to let me know if you think there's an alternative. I'm not sure there really is, but if you've got a recommendation for XP, let me know. Ian@thedigitallifestyle.com, and I think the Vista interface for Media Center is a massive step forward. So now to an email on disappearing online content. Hi Ian, I hope you don't mind emailing you. I've been using Media Center since 2005 and absolutely love it. I've noticed that the BBC has disappeared from my online spotlight just a year ago. Is this just me, or has it been removed as an online spotlight service for media center users? I searched the internet but could not find anything indicating whether it should be or should not be there. I get Reuters and ITN, but the BBC has disappeared. If you know, it would be great to know. Regards, Oliver. Thanks for your email, Oliver. I checked and BBC had gone on mine as well, and to be honest, I hadn't noticed it until Oliver pointed it out. Which is a shame, because obviously the ideal place for BBC iPlayer is on Media Centre. There's a lot of great content on BBC iPlayer, and where I can get it to download the offline content and play it through Media Centre, it would be nice to have the UI already built in from official one. I know there's a couple of third party applications. The previous one that Oliver was talking about was pretty basic anyway. It was a kind of a news page, but an HTML application. So I'd like to see a native Vista application done properly, officially from the BBC or Microsoft, that's going to be a BBC iPlayer and BBC News application. Well, thanks for the email. You can email me, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. Like I said before, I do like reading your emails. Now to a quick roundup of some of the news items from last week or so. First, I want to mention that the second of my how-to videos is out. And this is a video focusing on how to connect an Xbox 360 as an extender and how easy it is to use as an extender. The videos are aimed at new users to Media Center, and I'm pleased how popular the videos have been, so I'm going to keep going. So if you've got any suggestions for those how-to videos, please keep them coming. Like I said, they're aimed at new users, so as an experienced enthusiast, you know how to connect an Xbox up, you know how to put a TV card into a Media Center machine, but let's think about some of the new users and how they could do it. Other news, last week D-Link updated the firmware on their extender. The firmware is up to version 1.01, dated August 11th. And notice on their support page, it supports 1080p TV and video files. Look of the home page has been altered to improve navigation reliability. I've heard that it was pretty horrendous before the non-Media Center UI, and now it's just basic. The online media icon has been added to the homepage, supports for Rhapsody music service, support for live 365 internet radio, and DVRMS playback, AV sync issues solved in Media Lounge. So it sounds like the improvements are really all to their own UI and software, and not particularly to the Media Center side of it, as you'd expect, because that comes directly from your Media Center PC. I've not been able to test the Linksys extenders, and I know some people like it and some people have found it a bit slow. Media Center blogger Adam Thursby found an interesting post on Broadcast Buyer saying that there's a new add-in coming for Windows Media Center that will offer personalized TV and internet content. The article says the application will be a free download in online media and will be available in November on Vista Media Center. So I'll be interested to see what kind of application this is, but it'll be great to get more internet content into Media Center. Maybe it's kind of, as one of the commenters on the post noticed, that it's kind of a TV tonic type model, or maybe more like the internet TV type model is there through Media Center. So I'm looking forward to seeing that one, and hopefully bring more details on that on a future show. I'll link for that in the show notes. Another new add-in for Media Center, TV Manager, has been in beta for a while, but now it's in release version, and this is a Windows Home Server add-in that lets you move your recordings to your Windows Home Server for management and storage. It's something that I really wish that Home Server had out of the box, this kind of integration with Media Center, but this is a nice application. Version 1 is out, and it works with XP and Vista, and it's a free download, and so more details on the link in the show notes. Over at Engadget HD, Ben Drobar has got a hold of a HP Media Smart Extender. I think he missed those when he did his extender roundup reviews, but he's got hold of that now. And he says, in our recent roundup of Vista Media Center extenders, we were disappointed that HP Media Smart wasn't available at the time to go head-to-head with the rest. Now we have the Media Smart Connect in hand, we're anxiously trying it out to see how it compares. And we have to say that the manufacturer selling price of $350 and a street price of $300, we had pretty high expectations. There were no doubt that this is the nicest exterior and remote of any extenders available. We're not sure if these two merits alone help will live up to its premium price. Read the rest of the review in the show notes. So far, I think of the extenders I've used, As I said before, I'm quite happy with the Xbox 360, but I think the HP one is probably the nicest of the bunch, but you do pay a premium for that. And depending on your situation, you may want to just go for the standard or for the basic Linksys extender that just does the job, but it's nice and cheap. This week is Cydia, the trade show for custom installers, and I'm going to be talking with Microsoft about the Cydia announcements probably on next week's show. But there's been interesting stuff from CE Pro, and one interesting article I saw was around the speculation that Microsoft will make some kind of announcement of the TV feature pack at Cydia. And according to CE Pro, they're saying there may not be anything to say. They quote Microsoft Kevin Collins, who I should probably have on the show next week, is saying, I know there's been big speculation about an announcement, but we're not really doing anything around the TV pack, Collins says. He says the story on CE Pro about the TV pack pretty much covered it all. So I think Microsoft are playing down the significance of the TV pack due to the disappointment of the community, perhaps, and around the lack of availability. They kind of put themselves in a difficult situation, I think. They're trying to downplay it to the enthusiasts that, it's not something you should be upset that you can't get, while the customer trying to upsell it to the custom installer market, saying, look at these new features. So, a difficult balance act, and we should have more on that in next week's show. Also, out at CPRO, I have some other interesting articles. One in there saying that they picked up a rumour that Samsung will be showing off a generic version of the extender that works with non-Samsung TVs. You may remember at CES back in January, I saw their Samsung extender, which was a nice little small unit that only worked with selected Samsung HDTVs. The reason for that was that the TV controlled the extender via HDMI CC. Obviously, the market for an extender like that is pretty slim, as it only works with selected models, which is a shame because it's a nice, neat-looking device. So it'll be interesting to see if Samsung bring out an updated extender that works with any TV. Also, talking of extenders, it looks like Nivea has ceased development of their Xbox 360 base Edge extender, and instead we'll be working with third-party extenders like the HP MediaSmart. I like the Nivea Edge extender, but it was very expensive, and so I think going down the route like the HP ones makes sense. More Cydia news, I keep an eye out on my blog and my Twitter feed. I'll help try and bring you up to date on what's going on at Cydia, and like I said, listen out next week for some interviews from Cydia. My Twitter feed is twitter.com/isdixon, and the blog is on digitallifestyle.com. Well, before we go to the interview, I just want to mention that after we've been talking to Kevin, I'm going to be giving away copies of Kaspersky Antivirus. I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago, so I'll be giving those away. So now time for the interview. This was recording a few weeks ago. I chatted with Kevin Tofwell about cloud computing. We did it on the live stream, and then planned to do some more live shows, so we'll keep an eye out on the blog and on Twitter. Kevin's moved to cloud computing and moved all his applications to web-based applications. So I talked to Kevin about his computing needs and cloud computing, and I know what that means for the average user. And welcome Kevin to the show. Welcome back to the show, I should say.
Yeah, thanks, Ian. Always good to chat with you.
Now, we thought we'd stream this live today, but what we're going to be talking about is cloud computing, and I've been listening to you on the podcast and on the blog, and you've been talking about cloud computing quite a lot. So I wanted to talk about that and find out what that means for the rest of us. I know you're kind of living on the edge in cloud computing, but I wanted to see what that means for us. But just before we go into that, in case we've got any listeners that don't know who you are and haven't heard you on the previous show, just give us a quick background on who you are and what you do.
Sure. My name is Kevin Tofwell. I'm actually based out of my home office here near Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And I've been in an IT career for about 15 years, but about 14 months ago, I gave it all up. Jake on the Run with James Kendrick all that time. And, just have a little bit of a background in everything. And I've really been gravitating towards tablet PCs, UMPCs, and now the small notebooks or netbooks. So that's pretty much what I do.
And so when I first started to listen to you, you were really pretty much focused on sort of the tablet PC side of things. I think this has kind of changed, hasn't it, over the last year or so. I think it started with these when you got the UPC, you've moved towards the smaller form factors, and the tablet PCs are kind of a feature of those rather than a specific platform that you're focusing on.
That's correct, Ian, and that's because I kind of believe that you should use the right tool for the task. And as the computing world has changed, I've noticed that my needs have changed. And although I fully support and embrace the tablet PC platform, I'm finding that I don't really need to use it all that much in what I do. So I've been looking for more mobile. You know, it was great, actually, when we met up with you in CES, that's exactly what I had with me, and I was covering the CES show right from the floor with my Asus EPC.
So you had the EPC, that was really nice, and it was a nice, easy way around. And what was impressed with that is how you had the EVDO card in that, and you could kind of go around mobile, and you didn't need to go into the press room to go and, you know, find a machine and an internet connection. You could just kind of carry that thing around with you. So you think that's really changed? Do you think it has changed how you're operating?
I think it has, and the EVDO, I've probably had that now for about 3 years. And when I first got that, it was very impactful. Now it's like stage two is to have a small device to use that EVDO and work anywhere. It's definitely a change.
You're going smaller. You've got smaller devices, mm-hmm. and you're going mobile with the EVDO card. So I guess the next step was, you know, something like cloud computing. But a lot of people, you know, say what is cloud computing? It kind of covers so much things. So tell me what your definition of cloud computing is.
Sure, and I think you hit the nail on the head. It's going to mean different things to different people. I look at it from two sides. There's the whole server side, the cloud itself, folks like Amazon, Google that are running scalable services, and then I look at it from my point of view as a client using those services from the cloud, meaning my Google apps and just using a browser and extensions in my browser, et cetera. So basically anything that I can do online without keeping local data, where I could be working anywhere, and I can be working on any machine, that's kind of my high definition nebulous version of cloud computing.
So it's about sort of taking these things onto the internet and then sort of going very light on the client side.
Correct. I was going to say, you mentioned the Asus EPC. When you think about it, that only came with a 4 gig capacity to run your operating system, your applications, store your data. And really, I mean, we keep hearing about more and more storage locally, bigger SSDs, bigger hard drives, but I'm finding I don't need all that storage because I can do it all online and just deal with a minimal operating system of any type. You know, I can be OS agnostic, just need a browser and a connection.
Yeah, that's interesting, actually, that you mentioned about this OS agnostic thing, because I was trying some Linux distros, and I found using Gmail and Google Reader and things, it meant that all my settings were there and everything else was there, and it really didn't matter about the operating system because everything was sort of cloud-based.
Becoming irrelevant for me to a degree.
You're going cloud computing. So you had this kind of thing, I'd always call it an experiment, but this philosophy that you've got into now where you're moving completely to cloud computing. So first of all, what was the reason for going down that route?
Sometimes I do things just to see if I can, Ian. That's, to be quite honest. I think it's a good experiment. I think the timing is right to jump into this now and start looking at how feasible this really is. And what will it take? You know, what kind of device do you need? What type of connectivity do you need? How reliable are the services? So part of it is really to see if I can, and then to share that information with other people so they can decide, well, can I do that? Maybe I can, maybe I can't. I'm just trying to feed them that information.
What was the when you first moved across there? I guess also on cloud computing, we've kind of got two areas that I can see anyway, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but there's kind of the storage applications where you're storing just files up there, and then you've got the applications and services where you're actually, you know, you've not got anything local. So the storage services, is that something that I would say that's something that you can move into sooner? So is that something you're using? You're storing your data up in the cloud?
By and large, yes. I mean, I don't store really unless I need to, quite honestly. I basically am putting everything up, say for Google, all my docs are up on Google. I do have Google Gears installed, so I can at least work offline or see my documents offline.
But by and large, most everything I'm keeping, other than photos from my camera at this point, it's pretty much all online.
So what are the kind of services you can get then for storing data?
Oh, there's tons and tons of services that are store data, sync your data. I think of things like SugarSync and Dropbox for syncing. I think of Amazon's S3. There's front-end clients now like Jungle Disk to use Amazon S3 storage. There's the nice thing is what we didn't have 1, 2, 3 years ago. We didn't have this wide variety of services to actually store data online. You could actually grab 5 gig here, 10 gig there, and put yourself, put a couple hundred gig for free through various services right now.
So I'm thinking, there's things like folder share where it would sync, but that's not going over the sort of on a remote location. So the next step is then is going with that on a remote location and be able to access it from any device.
Correct, correct. What I'm really enjoying is since I have everything stored in the cloud, it has become so much easier for collaboration purposes. I can create shared folders on various services. I can invite people to use those folders and edit the documents that are in there, for example. I'm finding myself doing that much more than I would before. I used to, how it was. You'd create a document, you'd email it to somebody, they'd mark it up, it'd come back to you. It's now becoming more collaborative as a result of all this.
I mean, I guess the one of the things I think was useful is the fact that you can pick up any of your devices. You mentioned it sort of being OS agnostic, but I guess it doesn't really matter what device you're using. You could be using your EPC or a Mac or your UMPCs, and you can access all your data without having to think, oh, where did I save that?
Yeah, it's quite interesting that we're seeing more mobile clients. You talk about various devices. I mean, probably when we talk about this kind of thing, people are thinking computers, standard traditional PCs and Macs. But there are web clients available that you can view on your mobile phone. SugarSync, I know I've accessed documents right over my iPhone. The fact that we've taken the data off the local storage means not only can you use it any.
Sorry, I was lost at the end of there, but I guess just to what you're saying. So you can pick any device, but I think the biggest shift, though, I guess, is the use of services. You've got the storage already, but the use of web-based services. So tell us what you would consider a cloud application.
I mean, the easiest example is the one I've alluded to. A cloud application, I think immediately Google Docs comes to mind. And some people are using Zoho. I know Adobe's got their new Flash-based document productivity suite out. But I traditionally think of, Google Docs. You can apply it to my RSS reader, which, like you, Google Reader. Essentially, that's an RSS reader that keeps all the data in the cloud. We can take it offline if we need to, and that's handy when we don't have a connection. But, the fact that I can be on anything and look at my feeds and go through my feeds, I can be productive anywhere at this point,
And so you made the move, and I guess the first set of applications that you want to look at is like kind of like your email and your productivity. Previous to doing this, what did you use for email?
I typically used Outlook, and I originally had a hosted Exchange server. And back in October, when Gmail added their IMAP service, that's when I started looking at migrating away. So it was October that I went away from Exchange or tried to transition away. And I think I closed that account about 2 months ago. And so now I'm doing all my email in the browser. If I want to, I can still use Outlook with Gmail. So I don't have to totally leave the client apps behind. And for many people, maybe that's the good transition. Keep your data up in the cloud, but you still use a client application to access it because maybe you need functionality in that client app.
I use the Gmail for that same reason as well, because I'm using a Windows mobile phone, and I can use the IMAP on that, and I can use Outlook, and I can use the web-based client, and I just like the fact you can have all these different clients, and you can use it sort of offline, online, because you can sort of use the desktop client as well. So you've moved over there, so straight away you've saved yourself the money on the hosted Exchange server. So how have you found that working for you?
I've run into problems every now and again. I'm not going to, sweep them under the carpet. There's been some occasional IMAP problems, although lately everything's been pretty good for the past, I'd say, 3 or 4 months. We did actually run into an interesting situation last week, in fact. Google Docs was down for not just for people who use the free service, but even people who use the Google App service that pay for the service. So that was really an interesting wake-up call, I guess. For 45 minutes, folks were not able to work. And I written a post right after that. I wasn't actually affected because I was having lunch when it happened. But, you know, there's ways around that. When, say, the service goes down, that's when a Google Gears comes into play, and you can access your data locally because it's stored and synced locally. And, heck, I cut and pasted it right into Zoho and used another cloud service right away. So, you know, I still understand people's hesitation, though, because the reliability isn't quite 100%. And I wouldn't say that a client app has 100% reliability. Maybe you have hardware failure on, you know, locally, but obviously there's a lot of history there where your local hardware is going to work and you're going to feel comfortable with that as opposed to a cloud app.
I mean, I was going to, the next question, what would the disadvantages would be, but that's going to be one of the, you know, the thing that would really put me off going totally cloud is, you know, if Google Docs can go offline, then, you know, there's potential for any of the other services to go offline, and if they're off for any length of time, you could potentially be really stuck.
You could. You should always have some type of backup, and I don't mean backup of your data, or I don't just mean a backup of your data. Saving things locally certainly helps you, but even having a backup service. You know, I had already had my account with Zoho, and I was like, well, I'll just cut and paste my document into Zoho, keep working, and send it off if I need to. For email, that gets a little tricky, because most people rely on a single email system. So that is really tricky, and most people can't live without their email, so I'm not sure what to do in that situation.
But I guess you would have the same problem, though, wouldn't you, even if you were totally, you know, you're using a desktop. You know, I'm using Outlook, and you know, my Exchange server goes offline, so you're still stuck with that same situation in that case anyway, aren't you?
You are. I mean, if there's an Exchange server outage, you know, unless you've got your offline folders and offline access, the mail pulled down locally perhaps, an OST file, then, you know, you'd at least have access to your mail. But I see why people are hesitant. I mean, the cloud is not a proven commodity yet, and I've witnessed that firsthand. And I think, however, we're seeing the beginning of the trend. I don't think we're at the end of the trend. This is just the beginning, in my opinion, and I'm watching it mature. And that's what it needs to do before people are really going to jump on the bandwagon.
But one of the things that would also concern me as well is, let's say you find a nice third-party service for, you know, some document creation. Let's just say it's an office document. And
sure.
You use that service and you're quite happy with it, and they sell that service to somebody else who then says, okay, well, this is not a business for us anymore, we'll shut this down, gone. You know, there is a risk, isn't there, that you've put your trust in a third party and that could just be switched off overnight. They could decide it's not their business model and it's gone.
I would agree. There's risks there, and that's different from the traditional software licensing model where you purchase the Outlook suite from Microsoft and you install it and you run it and keep everything locally. I completely agree with that. And I think people who are considering this type of move to the cloud want to keep that in mind by probably not going with a service on day one. As soon as a service launches, you'd want to see how a company develops and how they're going to handle the data, if you think they're going to be in business for a long time. I have trust and faith that Google is going to be around for a while. Some of the newer services, say the SugarSync, the Dropbox, the others that I looked at in the past, you know, I didn't jump on them day one as my production service. I looked at them, I tested them, and it said, yes, this could work for me. But I waited a while just to see how they were going to progress before actually dumping all my data in there. And as far as if any company is sold, what happens to your data? I think that's a huge issue, not even just cloud computing. That's just a huge general issue in terms of personal data on the internet these days, because your data is everywhere, you know, and you're giving up some of that data in order to gain services. So it becomes a how much do you want to give up in order to gain, you know? That's how I look at it.
I was going to ask you, what about sort of personal security? I mean, some people like me, I would happily store my stuff on a cloud, and I have nothing too sensitive that I would be worried about. But some people are very concerned about privacy and think that, you know, storing all your documents, potential financial documents and whatever, on a service that Google's got access to is not a good thing, and there's some risk involved there.
I would not disagree with that. I think what it comes down to, just like we always say at JKNR, personal computing is personal. You've got to evaluate your needs. You've got to evaluate the potential tools and risks that come with those tools and decide how much of a, I guess, a risk are you willing to take. I'm not putting out tons of personal information when I'm using Google Docs, for example. I'm writing articles, say, for the New York Times or PC World, or just creating general spreadsheets for, you know, maybe a home budget. Yes, that's kind of personal, but the numbers could be potentially meaningless to somebody who's just looking at a spreadsheet. I'm at risk because of the flexibility and the mobility it gives me. Other people's may people may choose not to do that, and I respect that decision. I think it's an individual decision.
I mean, it's a good point there in the chat room. This is something that you know, enterprises and business are going to be very, very wary of. And I can see this working for consumers, but do you think that for enterprises that this is going to be a long while before they would look at transitioning to this kind of setup?
I think so. The target market is consumers more so than enterprise right now. That may change as we continue to use Google as an example. You know, as a Google goes to a General Motors and said, we want to host all your apps. We're going to sign such and such agreements to keep your data on different private servers, et cetera. If that can be worked out somehow technically, I think it could make enterprise inroads. But I don't know that today's model would work for most enterprises. That's a very good point.
When you hear about the, you know, some of these applications up on the internet, there's hundreds really. When I'm using, say, an Office suite, you know, I might have Word and Excel and everything, and I've got them on a single install, and they're all on my start menu. But then looking at sort of the cloud computing, it might be that there's a calendar solution that I really like on Google, and I want to use Adobe for my Word document creation, and I'm using my Gmail, and I'm using this, and I'm using that. Mm-hmm. These are spread out everywhere. So how do you kind of organize those yourself so that you can find what you want to and that, you know, you've got some way of sharing data between them?
Sure. That's a good question. And I have two approaches for that. One is I make ample use of my bookmarks in Firefox. So I've got a folder for Google, and all of my Google services have a bookmark under Google, for example. You could line all of your services up that way. So you've got quick and easy access. But the alternative is what you could do is use something like Prism, which is from the Mozilla folks, or Fluid on the Mac side of the house, where you can kind of, I don't want to say create an application from a web service, but it'll make a web service look and feel like it's an application that's locally installed, where you have a shortcut that you can double-click to Google Docs, and it'll just open up Google Docs in the browser and all that. It kind of gives you that client look and feel to help you manage that.
So it's a way of getting these things, because I guess that, you know, you as somebody that's used to these kind of things are happy, you know, with all the browsers and going through, you know, shortcuts and everything on your browser, but then going to a more mainstream consumer, they're going to find the idea of you know, of all favorites or bookmarks or whatever further applications difficult to understand.
Correct. And again, this gets back to the personal nature of everything. I mean, you know, I would never say, here's how you, Ian, should set up your computer and your browser and your web apps to, you know, for you to be productive. That just wouldn't make sense for me to do. So, I mean, the beauty of this is, there, like you said, there are hundreds and hundreds of these services. There are new local Firefox extensions coming out every day that I'm finding that will help me do something within the browser, so I don't have to use a clunky client app or install, you know, a 100 meg application when I can get away with a 100k extension. There's so much to choose from that you have so many choices right now.
And I guess one of the things that always bugs me, particularly on Windows, is you get a nice new machine and it's super fast when you get it unboxed for the first time and it's great. And then over a period of time, these things slow down as you install more applications. And, you know, especially us geeks, we like to install everything going. So potentially your machines will be nice and clean and can keep that fast response because you're not throwing loads of rubbish on there, but you still, you know, get to try some of these new services.
Yeah, that's kind of one of the keys here, because a lot of the newer devices are coming with very limited storage capacity. I don't want to load up an Asus EPC with, you know, gobs and gobs of applications if I don't have to. I mean, I'm finding all these extensions, for example, that give me functionality in the browser, and I find that they're taking up like not even 1% of the same amount of storage capacity on that hard drive or SSD drive. So there is something to be said for managing your capacity wisely on some of the smaller devices. This allows you to do that.
So you've got everything going on the on your cloud computing, and you've mentioned Google Gear. So just explain to us, you know, you go offline and you want to still access these things. You mentioned Google Gear. What does that mean? What can you do with that?
Well, what you can do at the moment, at least with the Google Docs, is you can actually view most of your documents that you stored online. You can view them offline because they're in sync between your local device and the cloud, so to speak. And in some cases, you can even edit those docs, such as a document. You can't do it, I don't believe, with spreadsheets yet, nor presentations. But I know on documents, you can actually work on the document offline, right in your browser. Google Gears will save that locally. And then the next time it has a connection up to Google Docs, it will sync that up. So that way, your changes are right on the server as if you did them on the server to begin with.
And is that automatic? Do you have to tell it to resync, or does it just pick up the signal and do it itself?
It's automatic. You just have to install Google Gears and it takes care of itself.
So that way then, that you if you're on the go, then I guess you could use some kind of the cell technology to connect, so you could be using EVDO card or whatever, take it with you and not to worry so much about the connectivity going up and down.
And not only that, when you think about the smaller devices, we always worry about the battery runtime. Well, I don't need to be connected to Google Docs to work in my Google Docs. I can save some power by turning my EVDO and my Wi-Fi off, just work locally, and then sync it back up and turn my connection on when I need to.
Now, someone mentioned in the chat room about the fact that, you know, there's a choice is a problem, the fact that you've got so many different services. So what are your sort of top services, or what are you using now to work?
Well, I'm still actually getting my feet wet with everything, and people have to realize that my computing needs are very minimal, because what do I do all day? I consume content in the form of RSS feeds and websites and video, and then I create content. You know, so I'm just working in a web browser on our TypePad blog, for example. So again, my computing needs are pretty limited. By and large, I am using Firefox 3 right now. That's my main portal to everything. I have added bunches of extensions in there that would help me, create screen clippings or edit photos and such. Instead of, you know, loading up some type of big photo editor, I'll just use an extension. I'm keeping most of my shared items or items that I want to collaborate with. I keep those in Dropbox, and occasionally James and I will share a document, you know, if we're working for something on the blog, for example. I've alluded to Google Docs a number of times. That's when I do my documents and so on. I haven't yet found a good video and audio type web service to take the place of Skype right now. There's a couple that James and I have tried. We just tried one yesterday. They all work through Flash, which is what you're doing right now with your Yahoo Live. So I'm kind of on the hunt for that. I love Skype, and I love the ability to talk to James during the day as we're working on stories, but you know, again, having the client kind of goes against what I'm trying to do. So
I guess you could have a sort of a Flash version of Skype, but I suppose for you're trying to go cloud completely, but I guess for a lot of people, they'll take the best of the cloud and the best of the client-side applications, and that'll work best for them.
And that's probably the best approach. I mean, there's no need to have to kind of do this self-imposed thing that I'm trying to do. I mean, there are times when I sit here and go, gee, this might be easier if I was using, say, the Windows snipping tool instead of, you know, this extension in Firefox. The tools should not make you less productive. They should make you more productive. So, you know, my advice to people is mix and match, you know, find what works for you and try different things to see what works in your workflow, quite honestly.
Well, I've seen some even sort of video editing packages where you can upload video and then edit them on the fly, all using Flash. Do you think, as the technology, the sort of the two things really, the key to it, the bandwidth improves and then the hosting technology improves, that we'll see more of the, even like the heavy duty applications, move way to the client side, to the cloud side?
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, the connectivity, I think, is ahead of the service right now in terms of application services. The connectivity is there, so now we need the services and the reliability to mature. But going right along the lines of what you were talking about, you know, if I want to edit a photo, typically most people will pull out, you know, either a Windows application or maybe Photoshop. They've bought Photoshop or Aperture on the Mac. You can actually go to Adobe's Photoshop Express Beta, and it's an online photo editing tool that mimics quite a bit of the functionality from Photoshop. So we're getting there. It's definitely not there yet for some things like video editing, but I think it will get there. I definitely do. It's a question of when.
And what about something, you know, the, so the business model mm-hmm. here? So, I buy Office and I pay Microsoft my money, or I buy or I get Skype client and I pay Skype, you know, for my extra services mm-hmm. or whatever. But where you're using Google Docs or you're using an Adobe product, it's a totally different business model. Is it something that's sustainable, you think?
It's hard for me to comment on a company's business model, but Google has been sustainable and growing at a phenomenal pace for the past X number of years, however long it's been. I think it's sustainable. At some point, we may have to pay a few bucks a month for an online service. I'm trying to avoid that. That's the secondary reason. I'm trying to watch my budget as a full-time blogger. I've got to watch my budget. So, you know, you alluded to Microsoft Exchange hosting. You know, that did save me $12 a month when I got rid of that and went to Gmail, you know. So I'm constantly looking for services that aren't going to cost me anything. But I think you raise a very valid point. Will people pay for a web-based subscription model? And you're starting to see that now. In fact, I think it was last week that Microsoft said, hey, we're going to have hosted Exchange for folks at a few bucks a month if you want it. So the trend may be starting right there right now.
And it's funny, you mentioned about the hosted Exchange there. That is absolutely somewhere where I can see enterprises jumping into that and not particularly being worried about the issues we mentioned before that you would be with cloud computing and enterprises. As an IT manager, I would be quite happy to use one of those services because you're saving a huge chunk of money and time rolling out Exchange servers. So I guess that's where the enterprise picture might progress in the future.
Oh, I think there's definite potential for the enterprise to save tons of money. Exchange servers in the data center and so forth. I think, though, that we're probably still more geared towards consumer right now. And until it's proven there, I don't see a mass exodus of enterprise adoption for cloud services yet. It's a couple years, maybe.
Now, one of the things that kind of everybody's been talking about recently is the iPhone. How do you see the devices like the iPhone fit in with this model? Is it helping the fact that you've got a good platform like the iPhone, or is it the fact that the cloud is helping to so you can have a lightweight model like the iPhone?
I would say it's probably both, Ian, because if you've got a decent service and you've got a decent way to access that service, I think you've got a win or a potential win there. I've had my iPhone for about a year now. I did not get the 3G version recently. And I'm constantly using the Google services on this phone. Not so much on the document creation, but much, much more on the RSS side, reading feeds when I'm not at my computer, and the Gmail. I mean, the client works perfectly well for me. I can use the native client, or I can just use Google's web interface, which again is optimized and quite speedy. So, you know, I think some services, there's definitely a win-win there. Other things that are going to require heavy-duty computing, probably not. But for your basic data consumption, I think there's quite a few opportunities there, and it's working well for me.
And how's it affected you with, you know, devices like you had the Q1? I mean, we talked way back probably 18 months ago when you were just really starting out with the UMPCs and mm-hmm. Q1s and stuff. And I, as we mentioned before, really, I kind of see that you've kind of moved away from that and looking more at like the EPC stuff. But has the cloud stuff meant that you interact with the Q1 differently?
I would say not so much. And quite honestly, my entire cloud computing experiment has been done on the Q1 Ultra Premium. At the moment, I don't even have the Asus EPC. I just shipped it off to somebody yesterday. So I'm working on the Samsung UMPC. Does it change how I interact? Well, I would say not so much, because really when I'm creating documents or creating content, even before, I was mostly using a Bluetooth keyboard, for example, with the UMPC. When I'm consuming content, yeah, then I'm sitting here tapping my screen and so on and so forth, because I can go sit on my couch and do that very easily. I don't think it's really changed. I don't think the cloud computing has changed the way I use the device, though.
I just found I ended up using my 2710 tablet PC a lot more, where I used to perhaps use a tablet PC like the TC1100 and the Q1. I now just tend to carry the one device. And I know that everything's available on there. And like we mentioned about email and everything else. I've got the phone on there, you know, to get all the emails. So I just found that I've ended up with kind of the two devices, a decent smartphone and the laptop, and you don't need to carry around a device like the Q1 anymore. It's kind of getting a bit of dust at the moment.
It all depends on if you're, I think, creating or consuming. And the iPhone, I'm consuming a lot of information on it. People complain that you can't sync contacts and such with Google right to the iPhone. Part of me says, I don't care, because the web client for that, I've got a connection all the time with the phone. It's a phone. It's got a data connection. So I don't even use the contacts application in the iPhone. I go right over to Google and I can look up contacts. So I think it depends on what you're doing with the device. What are you doing, consuming or creating?
I mean, the N95 mentioned in the chat room there, I guess it's about, you can kind of get away with having a decent smartphone, be it a Nokia or an iPhone or whatever, and then you can have, that's your kind of content, on fast access content, a way of accessing the content, and then you've got your PC, a UMPC or an EPC or whatever that you can then do a bit more sort of content creation on.
Absolutely. I mean, basically, whenever I leave the home and go out, I always have my phone, which is standard, so I've got my iPhone, and then I always have the UMPC. You know, I'm good for 10, 12 hours of doing whatever I need to do, create or consume, everything in one bag, I'm happy.
Now, so what would be sort of your ideal world? You know, you've got what you've got now. What would you like to see that would make your life a lot easier or a lot better when you're using a sort of cloud-only model?
I think there's got to be my trust in the cloud has to be raised. I mean, I have a pretty high level of trust, probably higher than most people, but there is always that nagging feeling of, really, Google Docs went down? Oh my goodness, what am I going to do? So, you know, we need some longevity here in terms of uptime. We need to make sure that when these things happen, they are momentary lapses. So I think in a perfect world, you know, you wouldn't see outages of any type. And of course, you know, you're in IT, so you know that doesn't exist. You know, you're always shooting for the five nines of reliability. And even with proven systems, you can still have problems. But we've got to get that level of trust built up for me to be happy.
Yeah. And do you think you're going to, how long are you going to continue with this for? Do you think you're going to stay going totally cloud? Or do you think at some point you're going to say, okay, this was a good experiment, but I want to go back to my sort of mixed model?
You know, I'm not a planner, so I may just wake up tomorrow going, I'm done. I don't know. It's a good question. I didn't even think about this when I did it. I just said, this would be really cool if I gave this a try. I wrote a blog post. I'm like, okay, I'm committed now. And I just went and did it. I will probably continue to do this for a while, only because it's not adding much to my workload in terms of, you know, getting in the way. A solution should not get in your way. If it is, it's not the right solution. So for the moment, I'm okay with what I need to do. I can do it all in the cloud.
And sort of finally on that then, do you foresee a time where we'll have a kind of a cloud operating system? So you'll have a device like the EPC or like the tablet that I'm using now, and that'll have a very minimal operating system on there that really just connects you to the internet and a browser, and then everything is done in the browser. Do you think we're ever going to see that time?
I think we could very easily. We alluded to it at the very beginning of this conversation, how this is starting to turn me very OS agnostic. I don't really care if it's Mac OS X or Vista or XP or a flavor of Linux. If I have a decent browser, that becomes my operating system. I am operating in the browser as far as I'm concerned. So I don't need much more, at least for my needs. Again, other people would have different needs and would probably disagree, and that's fine. But I could see it happen, a very lightweight operating system where we have a device with good connectivity and good usability in terms of how to navigate around in that browser. Yeah, I think it could happen for some people.
I mean, I can see for me, having the best of both worlds. I like having I'm going to be editing this audio later, and I want to do that on a client machine with a decent power.
Yeah.
So I can see having both available to me for being sort of the best way of working. But I can see for some people not having to shell out for, a family at home, not having to shell out for a full copy of Office is definitely the way it's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
So question then for you from Philip from the chat room. What are you waiting for in the cloud next, Kevin, and what would rock your cloud world?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know, one of the things that I do now on a client app, only because I really have to, is read my ebooks. I got to think about that. I don't know if I would want to be reading those in a browser and always requiring a connection to do that. But I'm thinking that's one application that I actually, you know, need to run because I just read books all the time. So I'd have to think that one through. I've mentioned Skype before. I really, really want a good, you know, cloud-based or peer-to-peer, non-client audio-video chat system, you know, just because I use that type of, I use Skype every day. I probably have Skype running on video for 1 to 2 hours a day every day. I mean, that's a good chunk of people's day when you think about it.
But I guess then, you know, that's not something that's totally out of the question because we're using the Yahoo Live and that's essentially what we're doing. We're just streaming the audio and the video. So I guess it's just somebody coming up with the application.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what about the development tools? I'm not really. I know you're not a developer, no. But are there tools out there for developers to create these applications?
I suspect there is. I mean, development is certainly not my forte. I've putzed around in some of the Microsoft IDEs probably about 6 years ago. So I don't know what's current, what's available out there now. I mean, you're seeing a lot of functionality with the addition of Ajax and JavaScript these days. I think there's plenty of tools out there. I mean, it's amazing to me how quickly applications are being developed, or I should say web services are being developed. I look at something that I have running all day, FriendFeed, for example, and maybe not everybody's into the social networking thing, and that's fine, but the fact that thing together and they keep adding to it almost on a weekly basis, it tells me, yeah, there has to be tools out there for this kind of stuff because they're making it happen, quite honestly.
And a question for you from Chippy, what would be your ultimate mobile cloud computing device look like?
Oh,
question.
Anything, any device that Chippy gets in his hands, that's the one I want. He gets the best device.
We get so many. Which one are you going to pick?
Yeah, I see him laughing. Oh,
I can never keep up with his blog for the amount of devices he's got coming through.
Yeah, that's good stuff. He gets a lot of good devices and puts them so it's kind of nice to see that. And many of those devices aren't, you know, seen over here in the United States unless you get them through an importer. So it's, you know, it's a nice way for us to keep up with what's going on. You know, I look at the Gigabyte device that Chippy has right now. I forget which one it is. Maybe the M528. He'll probably put it in the chat which one it is. It looks like a nice little device. It reminds me very much of an OQO, for example, but it's lower powered. But there we go, 528. And, you know, that definitely looks appealing to me. I think it's, again, more of a consumption device than a creation device. However, you know, it has potential there. You know, quite honestly, I love my Q1 UMPC. I love the whole Q1 line. I've bought three of them. I keep upgrading. So obviously, I like that form factor. It's working for me.
So the fact that you've not got the built-in keyboard, you're happy using a Bluetooth keyboard?
I'm perfectly fine with it because I can stow it away when I don't need it. It's not in my way. I've got my touchscreen. I've got handwriting recognition. So I'm okay with that. You know, would I, you know, steer away from, say, an MSI Wind or one of the newer Asus EPCs? No, I'm definitely looking at those. I've never said, you know, you can't have a keyboard on a device. I have no problem with a keyboard as long as it's usable. It has to add value, in my opinion.
So what if I said then, okay, you've got your device, your ultimate sort of cloud computing device. Can I take your MacBook Pro away, please, because you don't need that anymore? Would you be happy with that?
Well, honestly, I could live with that. It's interesting. I mean, there are definite advantages and disadvantages between various operating systems, and I'm not going to sit here and start a Microsoft versus Apple war. That'd be pointless. The Mac does certain things better for me, no question. My UMPC does other things better for me. Could I live without my Mac? Sure, I could. I enjoy using it, you know. I still actually have to use it for our Mobile Tech Roundup podcast because based on how we do that show, I've got multiple audio streams and it's just too much. Nice. But, you know, if you're trying to get my MacBook Pro, I guess I could send it to you, Ian.
Well, I'm happy with my tablet PC.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah, just check. And just finally, I wanted to touch on the fact that as a media center user, I can see where I've got video, audio, and pictures
right.
that on my machine, and Do you think you'll be able to? We're going to ever have the situation where there's going to be enough bandwidth and storage for we can store our video on there, so I can record a show and it'll go straight to my cloud storage, or is that something again that's going to be sort of client side for quite a while now because of the just bandwidth issues?
I think you're hitting the nail on the head. I don't think it's a storage capacity issue because you can buy as much storage as you really need. You know, you look at an Amazon S3 service and you can, you know, pay for the gigabyte. It becomes, I think, one of bandwidth for one thing. But even, you know, and I can't comment outside of the United States. Here, our broadband speeds are definitely getting much faster. I have a Fios line going in right now, and I'll probably have 20 megabit down and 5 back up. But from a mobile device perspective, I think it's kind of hard to do that. I mean, if you're talking desktops or an Xbox 360 and so on and so forth, you know, I have a Vudu box as well, for example. You know, I can just download videos on the fly and watch a standard definition video right now with no lag whatsoever. When I get my Fios pipe, I'll be able to watch a high-def video streaming down live, and I'm good. I think it becomes one of bandwidth and certainly of decoding. You know, I mean, the mobile devices aren't meant for, you know, pushing 1080p video around. But if you've got enough computing horsepower, sure, I don't see why not.
And I guess then things like pictures being smaller are something that you could use. And you mentioned some of the sort of the online syncing things. I know that quite a few listeners have been using those to get their pictures synced onto multiple devices. So they may have the Media Center machine, their UMPC, their desktop, your laptop, and they can use those as a way of syncing those across.
Yeah, I could see it more on the picture side. Even audio from a podcast perspective, that's not necessarily a problem. Side, it's kind of difficult, but you know, on the picture side, one of the free apps in the iTunes store, for example, is called Exposure, and it links to my Flickr account in the cloud, and it pulls down my photos, and I can view my photos. I can view the comments on my photos. Then it uses the geotagging to show me Flickr photos taken near my location. So, from an audio perspective, that's definitely there. You've got streaming audio in every way, which shape or form. Video is kind of tough. It's just because it takes so much bandwidth.
And I know I said finally before, but really finally, we didn't talk about Microsoft's Mesh initiative. Do you think that is something that's we talked about cloud operating systems? Do you think that is going to be a platform and operating system, or do you think it's just a case of them catching up with the likes of Google?
Well, I think no doubt it's a platform, and I hope people didn't miss the fact that it is a platform. But it is also a bit of catch-up and a bit of Microsoft thinking, or my thinking, that Microsoft needs to consolidate all of their services. They already have, you know, the folder share and SyncToy and the live services. There's so much redundancy in there. I'm kind of hoping that Live Mesh gets rid of some of that redundancy, so that way it is the one place that you can sync your devices. Right now it only works on Windows PCs. It doesn't even work on Windows mobile devices. And, you know, that's, again, this is where I think they need to catch up, because they already have services that can do that. Why can't they bring that in? I have high hopes for it, but only if they see that they've got the redundancy and they're willing to do something about it.
Yeah, I think it probably is going to be something that's worth... I mean, I'm using it to replace folder share now, so I'm syncing all my content on multiple machines and for the remote desktop side. But I guess it's something that's going to be worth looking at in the future when they publish the SDK and developers start to really get hold of it.
And they'll need to add support for more devices, and they do plan to support the Macintosh systems, and yet a lot of these web services that I'm using already support both Windows and Mac, so they're a little bit behind the eight ball, I think. Then again, the advantage those other companies have, they're smaller, they're more agile than a Microsoft, which is large, and so on and so forth. But I don't want to make excuses for them, but I can see why this is happening.
And I think getting the APIs and everything else right is pretty important as well. So they're not just throwing a client application out there, sort of doing a whole platform.
Very true, very true. I mean, I don't think they want to throw something out there and then, you know, have to revise the SDK, you know, again and again, because it's just gonna, it'll just turn developers right off, and it won't become a platform anymore. At least not one that people will want to use.
Now, you mentioned your podcast, so before we go, just give us some links and let us know where we can find out more information about all this kind
of
stuff.
Sure, sure. The podcast that we do that once a week. It's called Mobile Tech Roundup, and that's at mobiletechroundup.com. I do that with James Kendrick and Matthew Miller. Matt works over at ZDNet. He's the mobile gadgeteer. And obviously, James is the other part of JK on the Run, which is our mobile tech blog. And, you know, we keep busy. There's no lack of information to either talk about on a podcast or write about on a blog. When it comes to mobile tech, there's just such a wide, vast array of topics, devices, services, and tools out there. So, and if, you know, if interest is any gauge, there's a lot of people that are interested in this type of technology. And I've seen it grow over the past several years. And I don't look at that as just a benefit, say, to the website and to the content and things that we do. I see that as a benefit for the entire market. It's really, really nice to see people embracing the mobile lifestyle.
Absolutely. I mean, the Mobile Tech Roundup's a great show, and one that I've definitely I definitely listened to. And I'm always waiting. You always say, come on, where's the podcast this week? It's on a Monday morning. I need that to get me through the commute to work.
People have to realize it's a challenge because I'm on the East Coast of the United States. James is in the Texas area, so he's in the center of the United States. And Matt is near Seattle, Washington. So we're across three different time zones. And just coordinating schedules can be challenge number one. And then there's the technical snafus that we always have. It's just the way of the world. So it can be a challenge, but we love doing the show. I can't believe, actually, this October will be 3 full years of doing that podcast. It's been such a thrill.
Yeah, it's been a great show. I didn't realize it three years.
Yeah, it really has. It's unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Well, many thanks for your time today, Kevin. It was really great to talk to you, and it was really great to have the chat room open as well. I really do like doing the live shows, as well as adding that element of risk and danger. It's also great to get the input through the chat room as well.
Oh, I absolutely agree, and I always have a good time chatting with Ian and the people that are out there in the chat rooms. It's, you know, CES, I've said this before, I just should mention it again. That's where I see Ian. It's the one time a year that I actually get to sit down with him and chat. And it's always a blast, always a blast.
And it's funny, I know we've mentioned it when we chatted previously, but there was the one year where we actually met each other, sort of bumped into each other in the hundreds of thousands of people we'd never met before. We managed to literally bump into each other.
Yeah, 150,000 people there, and who do I bump into? Ian Dixon, there he is.
Yeah, great, it's stuff. Amazing. Well, many thanks for your time today, Kevin. I really enjoyed chatting to you, and thanks for everybody in the chat room. I really enjoyed doing the chat, and we'll try and do it again in the future.
Great. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks to Kevin. You can find everything talked about in this week's show in the show notes on thedigitallifestyle.com. I mentioned before about the Kaspersky giveaway. A couple weeks ago, I said just Twitter me with your details, and I gave those away. So congratulations to CS Teamberg and Forum Dude 1024. You both win a copy of the Kaspersky Antivirus, and thanks to David McKay from the Home Service Show for sorting that out. I might do another one of those next week, see how it goes. So that's it for this week. Like I said, you can catch me on Twitter. Email is ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. I'll be around on blogs and the forums. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week. Bye.